All right. Hello, Morrow Bay, and welcome to the April 17th version of the Public Works Advisory Board. As we established, we're establishing a quorum. We have a new member, David. Help me, David.
Sozino.
David Sozino is joining our ranks, so now we are at full strength, and it's been a few years since we've been at full strength, so welcome, David. All right. And so with that, definitely with David here, we can establish a quorum and call to order. Our next item is a moment of silence, please. All right, thank you. Our next item is announcements or presentations from the board. Does anybody want to make a announcement of anything coming up?
Nope.
All right. With that said, announcements, presentations off. We next move to our consent calendar. Our first item, A1, is approval of minutes from... public comment period. I should. Okay, I'm so sorry. I thought it was later. So our next thing is public comment. We have an agenda. We have a number of items on the agenda. You can speak to each item as it comes up, or if you'd like to speak before in public comment, please approach the mic, name, and express your interest.
Good evening. My name is Robert Davis. I chair the Morrow Bay Citizens Bike Committee, and I want to speak to an item that's not on the agenda at this time, and that's the Morrow Bay City Bike Route Map. And can I bring this up and give you all a copy? I'm really proud of this map. We were the first city in the county to develop a city bike map, and it was a collaborative partnership. Slocog Rideshare provided GIS files, and Joffrey Chiappella of Slocog worked with our local public works, public services. Barry Rands designed the map. Mary and Tom Hay of Hay Printing and Graphics printed the map. The money was $900 was donated by the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club, and $900 from
no attention with regards to our streets. A few potholes have been fixed, but it's been pretty lean and mean. We've hoped all along when the streets are being done that the hillside, I'd say Ironside and above, would be considered for repair. And I understand the 13-14 is pretty much done, but you're looking to the 14-15 fiscal year. And I was happy to learn just this evening that Nutmeg is going to be addressed, which is where I live, and some associated streets around there. But there has been a lot of breakage in the pavement, especially along the downhill side, because it slips. But we found that it's starting to break up everywhere on the street. And the dry weather this last season, we've seen a lot of buckling in the street. And I believe it's because the moisture normally gets some, the streets and the dirt under the streets normally get moisture in the wintertime. But it's been dry so long that it started a lot more cracking. So I believe that the streets need to be completely redone. They've been sagging and in need of repair for a long time. So I'm putting in the pitch that if this can get done in this upcoming budget in the 14-15 fiscal year. One other thing. I believe that there's others interested in, there's a lot of telephone poles up there, and a lot of wires like we have in a lot of parts of the city. And a lot of them are leaning. But if we're going to redo the street, I think this would be a perfect time to give the homeowners an option of undergrounding. And because you can do that and then do your street improvement. And that means you don't improve the street and then come back later and dig it up. So just a thought, food for thought. We on the hill and talking to the neighbors, we'd sure love to see the street work done and the pole work if possible. So thank you very much and have a good meeting.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the comments. And do we have any other further public comment? All right. I have. Does anybody have any? Anybody get any correspondence from anybody? I have two emails. One from Nancy Bast up on Fairview. Her comment is that although Fairview has been redone in the last 6-8 months, there really needs to be some sort of speed control on Fairview. Maybe some painting on the street, the miles per hour, simply because people are going too fast up there. Next, I had a comment from Blue Heron Trailer Park on the bottom of Quintana. Some of the residents are very concerned about the paving in that trailer park, and I understand there might be is private property. I don't know how if there's a crossover between the public and private paving, but they were concerned that some of the paving in the town in the trailer park wasn't being redone properly. So with that said, do we have no other further public comment? And we move on to our consent calendar. Our first item is A1, approval of minutes of February 20th. Would anybody like to make any comments, or do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes as stated.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Not in favor, say nay. Motion carries. We go to item number A2, director's report. And this is always a fun one, and I know, Rob, now that you went back to print, I know you probably want all sorts of questions, correct?
I'd love all sorts of questions.
Oh, there you go. And so with the director's report, how about if we start down on this end, Ron, with you? Do you have any comments or questions for Ron on the director's report?
I have just a comment. I've noticed that the average usage of gallon per person per day average is now down to 90 gallons a day. Is that unbelievably low? Is that right?
That's pretty low for California. There and maybe some remnant pieces of old asphalt there.
Well, I love seeing it. We have and more sidewalk.
That's CDBG funded.
Oh, okay. Very good. That's all I had.
I just wanted to follow up a little bit on Jan's comment, just looking at the conservation efforts. And I know that you've been, notified the public about trying to conserve water. Are you satisfied with these results, or do you think that there is a need for more conservation efforts at this point?
At this point, I think people have done what's reasonable. I mean, there's probably room for improvement, but we've seen a reasonable reduction in our water use. And for this water year, it changes. But the last word is we're still going to be receiving state water for this water year. Next water year, that may change. But for this water year, we're still receiving our state water allocation from our carryover water that's in storage in San Luis Reservoir. So I think we're doing very well. This item will also be, there'll be a couple of water items on this coming city council meeting where council will consider basically restating their emergency declaration from 2009 and then looking at the issue that the board looked at last time was retrofit ideas for the WEUs. So you can look forward to those two items, water items, on council agenda also.
Thank you.
I knew I had something I wanted to ask. Up here under streets and sidewalks, you have this huge paragraph about how to contact you if we need potholes and stuff fixed. And then down here in miscellaneous, you say, let us know. So are we eliminating the e-notify and replacing it with let us know? Because it's you've got it in both places, and it's contradictory to each other.
Yes, it should be just the let us know. I probably haven't looked at that page, and we're calling it two different things, but it still is, it's let us know. I think when it was first rolled out, it was e-notify,
right.
And now it's let us know.
Okay, and is there a button on the front?
Yeah, on the front page,
so people
a left-hand link that says let us know.
And there's a button.
If you click on that button, it'll bring up a series of categories for... There'd be streets, police.
It's not buried.
No.
It's on because we've been arguing about it being buried for 2 years.
It's on the left-hand link.
Okay.
I think second from the top is let us know. Maybe third.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sure. David, you have a question?
I do. Regarding going back to the water situation again, you talked about we were definitely going to be using state water. Can you at this time tell us any news regarding the California Coastal Commission in regard to permits for our desal units?
We're still working back and we're trading question and response letters at the present time. We think we answer everything, and may generate some more questions. So we're probably going to seek outside help from a firm that has expertise in recent permitting and has a relationship with the Coastal Commission staff that actually looks at these desal plants to kind of break the ice and get us moving forward on it. And I think the next step will be probably instead of exchanging letters, a face-to-face meeting so we can get all the issues on the table and get them addressed in one time rather than trading letters back and forth for the next couple more months.
Great. Thanks.
I have a number of questions, but first, you just said something, Rob, that makes me think. When you talk about water year, what are the calendar ramifications of a water year? Is it fiscal year June, or are we talking January 1st? When you say a water year, what do you mean?
The State Water Project uses the calendar year for their programming, so it's January to December. The county uses... kind of based on more of a rain cycle year. So it's June through May. So they get the full rainy season in 1 year. I'm sure there are other agencies that track water differently, but we generally use... we can talk in whatever water year the agency that we're working with uses. So we're fluent in all manners of water years.
I'm plant with Bruce Keel. And one thing, and he's here in the audience tonight, and I don't think he's here just to hear those kudos. But one thing he said yesterday really struck home, and I wanted to make sure that it came out tonight. He's talking about all the things going on at the wastewater treatment plant. One thing that he'd like to put out there on a PR request for everybody out there in Morro Bay is not to throw away napkins in our wastewater treatments and down the toilet. And these napkins are the ones that you use to wipe up your floors, to clean your house. But when they go through the system, they can really jam up the system and make it very onerous and troublesome for our wastewater treatment plant. So after talking to him yesterday, I wanted to put that out there for all of Morro Bay, that this is one way that we can help our wastewater treatment facility.
It's really any of those random woven products that we're seeing lately, Swiffers, baby wipes, makeup wipes, the ones with Clorox in them that you can wipe down your countertops. Those are very strong fibers in there, and they tend to what's called rag up, and wrap themselves around pump impellers, gum up our sludge processes. So they're really a bane to the wastewater treatment industry. They're convenient for home, but they're not good for the system. Also, don't flush your dental floss either.
So I know over the years we've talked about things not to flush, but after having this talk with Bruce yesterday, he made me a believer. I'm like, okay, we have to really put that on blast for Morro Bay. Strictly toilet paper. The next item I have is on page 4, talking about streets and sidewalks. I know we have a number of sidewalk projects going on around town, but could you just to put it out there and let folks in Morro Bay, I know we have some on Beach Street, but is there one or two sites going on around town?
We actually have a number of projects in progress. Beach Street is one. Another is Main Street just to the south of Pacific. Another on Pacific right at Main, where we're going to correct some drainage problems as well from due to the tree root intrusion. We just finished sidewalk down at Pacific and Market in front of the parking lot down there. And we'll be doing more work up on Dunes between Monterey and Main Street. And then on Main Street just south of or just north of Dunes.
And were these projects kind of looked out over time, looking at just things we need to have redone, or were these larger issues?
Actually, we've been doing surveys of our sidewalk needs since 2007, and we submitted a project to the county for CDBG funding in 2012. We've received a grant for 2012, 2013, and we're expecting to receive more funding for 2014. And so consequently, what we've done is put in place what's known as an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract for sidewalk improvements, which will allow us to continue to order more work as funding becomes available.
No, because it looks like it's going to be a great addition.
There's over $500,000 worth of work that's already been identified as deficiencies in our sidewalk system.
Well, that kind of begs an interesting question. We have a pavement management index. Are we going to include the sidewalk maintenance index in that, or how do we do that?
You know, we're going to address that in our last item tonight when we talk about the streets.
All right.
And just want to expand on that a little bit. This project really is a gap closure project, so it's to fill in those spots where there is no existing sidewalk right now to make sure that we have accessible pathways leading into our commerce centers. That's the how we qualify for the CDBG grant funding. Rick mentioned that there's a deficit of $500,000 in sidewalk projects. We probably get around $40,000 a year through the CDBG program. So we're going to be working on this for a while.
Well, no, that's great. I mean, in terms of the pavement management index, in terms of keeping up with just basic infrastructure needs, that's good to know. Now, I do have a question on this on page 4 about the pavement management index. Would you rather answer it now? And it's talking about specifically about this number of streets that have been worked on in the past year or two. I know that we have a list of streets. Would you like to talk to it in that last item, or would you like to address it now?
I think it'll be better to keep all the street issues together with that item tonight, last item tonight.
Well, no problem. All right. So from that, unless we have any other further questions about the director's report, we're going to move on. We don't have any old business. We're on to new business. C1 City Park.
And three major changes, as you can see on the presentation board here. That three major changes have taken place in the last couple of years. Those changes are flood map revisions, new law passed by Congress called the Biggert Waters flood insurance reform, and then the Morro Bay's participation in the community rating system. The first major change was the revision of the flood map,
in November of 2012, and this was probably the most significant change in the flood map since we first came out with our first flood map was published in 1979. The major changes include the high resolution photo map that it's built on. Because of that high resolution, you can identify houses a lot better than you ever were before. And so some people are getting phone calls from their insurance or company or their lender saying, "Ah, looks like your house is in the floodplain." So some people are having to buy insurance that never had to buy insurance before because of that high resolution map. There's also a change in the vertical datum. That's more of a technical term, but it does impact the elevation of the floodplain. There are some changes in the floodplain boundaries, and specifically close to the high school and the wastewater treatment plant. That was all part of study we did when we were thinking about putting the new wastewater treatment plant down there. And then also some flood elevations were also changed in that area. And so all of these changes have meant that some properties are now in that weren't in before, and some places flood elevations are higher or lower, and those changes all affect insurance rates. Then the second item, that big change, is the Congress passed this Biggert Waters flood insurance reform, and the main purpose of that reform program is to basically make flood insurance program pay for itself. So subsidies are trying to be eliminated, being phased out, and so they're doing that gradually as new policies come in. So whenever a property is sold, you get new flood insurance rates. Be careful. Don't let your insurance policy lapse and try and renew it, because the new rates will kick in. If a property is insured for the first time, that also you get those new rates. And then, subsidies are going to be phased out even for existing businesses and homes over a matter of years, too. Now, one of the other things that has come up is that in order to get more accurate flood insurance rates, they're now requiring elevation certificates to be completed on houses, some that have already had flood insurance for a long time, but the insurance companies are asking for these elevation certificates. And basically what that means is a surveyor has to come out to the house and determine where the finished floor is and some other things on the property in relationship to flood elevation, furnish that information to the insurance companies so that they can get a zero in on exactly what the flood risk is for these properties. And that's an extra cost to the homeowner. And these insurance or elevation certificates usually cost in a range of $500 to $800 and requires a professional engineer or surveyor to do that. So insurance rates are going up. How can homeowners then reduce their costs or insurance rates? Well, number one, there's community-wide discounts are available through the community rating system. I'll be talking about that a little bit more later. There's also flood maps can be officially, formally changed with the help of a professional engineer. A professional analyst can actually change the map if you have reason to believe that your house is in a floodplain, but it shouldn't be. You can actually have that a formal procedure. Morro Bay is one of those communities now that's part of that rating system or the CRS. And like the slide shows, the citizens of Morro Bay that are paying flood insurance get discounts because of the city's participation in this program. The city joined this program in 2012. The insurance rate discounts didn't kick in until October of 2013. We are only the second city in the county to participate in this program, San Luis Obispo being the other one. And some of the activities that we do, that the more activities you do, the higher the discount you get, and there's a whole point system and things. But some of the activities that we do to help reduce flood risk and to get the discounts for our citizens is we have an above-average flood ordinance, which we require, for example, that finished floors for new houses be elevated 2 feet above flood elevations rather than the normal requirement of just 1 foot above. We have extensive open space reserves in Morro Bay so that there's no building in certain parts of the floodplain, and that gives us extra points. And then we have a lot of information and technical assistance that's available to the general public or specifically to people that have flood concerns. So the benefits of participation, again, in summary, for people that live in Morro Bay and are paying flood insurance, we have discounted insurance rates up to 10%. Lower insurance rate for new buildings that have to meet the requirements of our new floodplain ordinance. Those would have less insurance or smaller premiums than houses that were built before our new floodplain ordinance. And then, like I said before, there's increased availability of technical assistance and information. And cumulative result of this program is we're going to see less flood damages in the city of Morro Bay. And I mentioned there's technical assistance available. Anybody that needs more information about this program, technical assistance for, you know, getting your insurance rates reduced, can call me. My phone number and my email address is on that last slide. And I'm open for questions.
All right, so we'll open up from this side. Let's go. Marlis, do you have any?
I do. First of all, you mentioned a floodplain ordinance. Can you tell me how long we've had that and essentially what it comprises?
Yes, the floodplain ordinance was adopted by City Council in 2012, I believe, late in the year. A lot of stuff happened in 2012.
Okay.
It's based on what is called a model ordinance for the entire state, with a few extra things for Morro Bay, like the 2 foot requirement above flood level, which is unique for Morro Bay.
Okay. And just to follow up, in reading the report that you provided us, I noticed that there were cities that have a higher rating, and they've obviously done more to mitigate floods. Do you think we should be doing more? And if so, what could we be doing? Do we need a formal program, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yes, the cities that have these, I think the maximum discount is a 50% discount. And those are generally for cities that have been in the program for a long time. There's a whole range of things that you can do to earn more points and to reduce risk in the floodplain. And gradually, as we have time in our department, we can do more to get our flood insurance rates lowered.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to add to Barry's comment about our floodplain ordinance. We've actually had a floodplain ordinance in effect for quite some time. It's since the late 70s or early 80s, and it's been modified over the years, increasing the freeboard requirements, your height that you need to build above the floodplain. And it's always based on the FEMA's model ordinance. Our local coastal plan also covers building in the flood risk, and that's where that 2 foot requirement comes from, is from our local coastal plan that has that requirement for the 2 feet of freeboard.
So do we have major facilities in the floodplain?
Our city corporation yard is in the floodplain. Our existing wastewater treatment plant is in the floodplain. Our desal plant is in the floodplain, but it's been elevated above.
Is 2012 the first revision since your original back in 79, or has there been intermediate map revisions?
There have been intermediate map revisions, but none as significant as this one.
Oh, okay. Because it's been a while since they went to 88, so that kind of caught my eye when I saw that it hadn't changed. Did this revision actually increase or decrease the acreage or, you know, the area that is falling into the floodway and floodplain? As a result of the higher resolution, everything else, did it actually grow or did it actually scale it back from the earlier map?
You know, I never really looked at that. I know that flood elevations generally decreased in the area of some of our public facilities, corporation yard and wastewater treatment plant. The extent of the floodplain...
It hasn't been analyzed to see if it's better or worse as a result.
I think
sometimes they go to the higher resolution, it tends to bring it in tighter, and that's one of the reasons why you have surveyors go out and, you know, do cross sections and try and tie it down. So I was hoping it actually relieves some with this latest revision.
Yeah, I know one case in point, it did reduce the width of the floodplain behind where Lemos is building.
Oh, okay.
That waterway there is a floodplain. It was much wider, and then this new map actually narrowed that down a little bit.
And the only other thing, as far as developed properties go, is most of our floodway and floodplain on Morrow Creek and maybe a little bit towards Choro Creek, or is there other areas in this town where they actually have in the floodplain where you're not on one of the given creeks coming into the estuary?
There we go. So all those spots in light blue.
So there's quite a bit up in North Morrow Bay, it looks like. I can't quite tell down on the south end.
Yeah, I don't actually have the downtown area.
There's
not a lot of floodplain.
I see.
Down there, except for along the
Embarcadero. So there's a few spots up there in North Morrow Bay that actually fall into the floodplains off some dry creeks or, you know, occasional creek kind of things. Okay, thank you.
I think you pretty much covered what I was going to ask specifically, you know, a ballpark percentage of how much of our city qualifies for flood being in a floodplain and how much of that affects residents as opposed to commercial.
Yeah, that's a good question. There are considerable residential and both commercial areas that are in the floodplain and... but I don't know what that breakdown is. I do know that altogether, I think I had in the staff report, there's about $169,000 that are paid every year in premiums.
Okay, thank you.
I have a lot of thoughts, but I don't know how to especially put them in questions. I was going to say ask what Marla said, but how do we... how great is the possibility of increasing our rating if there aren't that many new houses being built? We have a lot of open space, and except for the commercial areas, the ones in blue, a lot of that is, I'm assuming that big blue at the bottom of the map is around the high school area. Is that?
Yes, that's...
What are the chances of increasing our? What areas do we have to increase the ratings? To improve our ratings, if you have this floodplain ordinance and it's affecting new homes being built, and if you are making that land higher down there where in that area where the maintenance yard is and stuff, how? In what other places or in what other way? What other things can we do that we can focus on to increase our rating?
Well, for example, just making things like we're doing tonight, making this information to the public, available to the public, and making our program more publicly known that actually gets us points. So we'll document that PWAB received this presentation, and that can help us get some points. And there's, you know, putting it on the website, the city website, things like that. So that's just one aspect. There's about 20 different categories where we can score points. But like there are some things that are low hanging fruit and some things that would require a lot more work and staff time. And so I think at this point we're working on the low hanging fruit.
Then you're not covered as flood insurance. But if you have rising waters, then it is. So the rain's coming from the sky, the water rises on the ground. In the case of a hurricane, though, that isn't in a normal flooding setting, that I don't think they do cover you under the hurricane side of it, because that's considered a totally natural disaster. The one thing to realize with this insurance is it's required by the mortgage holder. It's not necessarily you have to have it or not have to have it. If you own your, if somebody's lived here for the last 50 years, handed down the home from father to son kind of a thing, there's no requirement if there's no mortgage on the property. If your property shows up in the floodplains where it's in blue, two things happen. Either you buy the flood insurance or you get a surveyor out there and get an elevation certificate done that shows you're raised above the elevation of the floodplain. And I deal with a lot of stormwater issues. That's why I kind of didn't mind speaking to it. I do feel I do know it. Did that kind of answer
so
your question?
So if you have a severe storm which causes flooding, then that's from the ground up.
That you would be considered such. If you have a tidal wave coming in, probably not.
Okay.
So a tsunami or something like that, but probably not.
Probably not.
On the contrary, tsunamis would be considered flooding.
Oh, would the on
yes.
the tsunami?
So thing. In Morro Bay, we have flooding from both sides. We can get storm surges
and
tsunamis from the ocean, and that's considered flooding, and then also from the creeks.
Then why did they not cover in the hurricane on Sandy? It came up off the ocean.
If I can clarify, I think it depends on whether it's wind-driven or not.
Oh,
if it's a wind-driven flood
it's not.
Or water damage, it's
there
not covered under flood insurance. It probably is covered under property damage.
Thank you.
Ron?
Okay, you were talking about things that would trigger a raise in your flood insurance premium. One of the things that can really trigger it is when you refi, and they require a new insurance policy for the date of the refi. And a lot of times people don't realize that that also triggers your homeowner's insurance and your flood insurance all at the same time. So you
good
didn't
point.
Say refi, and that's a real big trigger.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I didn't realize that. A refi would trigger new insurance.
All right. Well, Barry, I don't have any questions. Thank you for your presentation. It's interesting to get the board to comment like they did. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, moving on, we go to item C2, presentation, PowerPoint presentations, Siemens presentation, energy and cost savings.
Yes, Mr. Chair, board members. Tonight we have Mr. Ernest Kim from Siemens Energy and Environmental Solutions to give us a presentation that has been seen by our mayor and city manager and recommended that we take it to PWAB before moving it on to the full city council for their review. This is based on, Mr. Kim will go into it, based on evaluation of some of the city systems and where there could be cost and energy savings for the city by pursuing this program. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Kim.
Thank you, Mr. Leivick. I feel like you've already done my presentation for me. Thank you very much for that. Thank you, board members, for the opportunity to present our project. We've started this project late last summer, and so we're excited to finally be here and present this opportunity to the board members here. My name again is Ernest Kim. I'm with Siemens, and unfortunately my engineers couldn't join me today. However, what I would like to cover today are some of the challenges that we found are facing the city of Morro Bay, what exactly our project would look like, the concept of it, of course share our audit findings that we spent time going through the city and investigating, and how this would address some of the more timely needs for the city of Morro Bay. And again, you know, hopefully what some of the next steps might be and what we're seeking for the board to approve. So in a nutshell, the challenges that are facing the city are rising energy costs, of course, water conservation, it is across everybody's mind, and I think we have hopefully somewhat of a solution on at least for a part of it, an opportunity to lead by example. The city has been very proactive, and I'll share what we found and maybe some areas how we can improve upon that. So this is what the yearly energy spend looks like for the city of Morro Bay. It's just over $400,000. As you can see, I know that when Rob and I started this conversation, unchanged, these are going to continue to rise. Our goal is to divert that and lower it, and our project would pay for itself. We want to call it a self-funded project. So for our audit, what we did was we started with the utility data. We gathered about 3 years' worth of utility information, looked at your water billing as well, and we walked through your facilities, examined the equipment. We went through the buildings. We went on your rooftops, looked at your HVAC units, looked at how you guys were controlling your lighting, the temperature, the climate control. And then next, we determined whether or not we had enough savings to justify this project, whether it would be economically beneficial for the city to go forward with this. So, you know, what we found in terms of, again, the city has been very proactive towards saving energy. The lighting has all been updated. They're the latest generation fluorescent lighting. Some of the things that could be improved upon, not really a very robust control system. They were controlled either by time clocks or by on-off switches. So there was a little bit of wasted energy there. The HVAC definitely needs some work. They're at their end of useful life, running inefficiently, over 20 years old. The staff, kudos to the staff for maintaining this equipment and keeping it running for 20 years, but it's about time to reinvestigate whether it would make sense to start replacing those units. The other system that we were very impressed to find was the solar panels on top of the community center. We know that they were installed in 06, and if they function properly, they can provide up to a third of the power for the community center needs. What we did find that you could this system needs a full diagnostic, to make sure that you're getting the optimal performance from it, and also could benefit from some light maintenance, and that means cleaning and maintaining it. To make sure that the city is maximizing the life out of this investment. So the water meters, there is, again, 10% unaccounted for water, and I'm not sure if the board is familiar with why that might happen, but currently the water meters that are installed in the city are the old mechanical walk-up meter. So as you might imagine, to get a reading on this, somebody literally has to walk up to each meter, lift the lid, and notate how much water has been consumed. This is time-consuming, this is expensive, and also there is degradation with those water meters because they're mechanical devices. What happens is as they get older, as water passes through it, there's impurities in the water, and that causes the mechanical devices to not read as accurately as they once did when they were first installed. So that can lead to unaccounted for water. And the lower the flow, low flow, the mechanical meters have a very difficult time reading low flow as well, too. So there's a certain range that they can read water, but when it gets too high or too low, they're unable to read it. So what we found was that the city can benefit by installing an automatic meter reader or a smart meter, an AMR meter. What we would do is install a fixed-base system. This would collect the information wirelessly. It would eliminate the need for a person to walk up to each meter and notate how much water is being used for that billing cycle. It's an electromagnetic meter, so there are not a lot of moving parts. It can detect almost to the drop of how much water is being passed through. And I'll explain other benefits to it as well, too. But the side benefits of it is it will eliminate a lot of the customer service requests that might come with a mechanical meter, having rereads for the staff, and also, of course, reduce risk to anybody who might have to go from door to door to read those meters. So since we know and we can kind of determine the degradation or meter accuracy over time, we can also predict how much additional revenue would be captured by the city by replacing these old meters. This is a project, again, what we wanted to do was create a project that is completely self-funded, that pays for itself. And the other benefit, of course, is that residents know exactly where they stand in their water usage. And I'll show you a dashboard of what that looks like. So the project that's proposed, we will be proposing a turnkey solution. This includes evaluating different AMR systems, engineering the system, programming it, capturing and recording all the GIS coordinates or the GPS coordinates for each meter location, and then, of course, measuring and verifying the system as well, too, ongoing. So this is the dashboard of what it looks like and a very proactive way of using and conserving your water. The other thing I noticed is as I was researching and preparing for this presentation, the city has certain restrictions, is under severe water conditions. It's hard to determine if a person is using or washing their car or using their water to water their lawn from 10 to 4. And so unless a person is literally driving by at that time and sees that person watering their lawn, it's difficult to catch that person in the act. This would be a way to monitor and weather and see if people are violating some of the city restrictions. And you can see that it can ping on an hourly basis or a monthly basis, depending on how the city would like to set that up. So again, our objective was to create a project that pays for itself. The worst case scenario, we wanted to create a project that is budget neutral. We were very happy to find that this project would actually create a positive cash flow for the city. So not only would it pay for itself, the city would actually benefit in the tune of over $80,000 per year by doing this project. So this, with new infrastructure, with savings, the city would be able to use those funds to maybe perhaps use it to increase the size of the project or reallocate those to other projects that they see fit. I presented this project in two different scenarios. One was a 15-year cash flow. The other one was a very budget neutral, and the return on investment was about 12 years, and after 12 years, the city would recognize about $1.4 million at the end of this project. So these are the two different scenarios that would be available. So there's a few things that Siemens does well, and one of the things that I'd like to say is that we are very good strategic partners when it comes to mitigating risk. So this project is a 15-year project, and we would guarantee the results as a corporation. What that means for the city is that instead of the city owning the risk that this project not work out for whatever reasons, Siemens owns that risk and provides the solution. And if there's any shortfall, meaning that once we investigate this further and put those guarantees on paper, if it turns out there for whatever reason that doesn't happen, Siemens actually writes a check to the city to make up the difference. So we own the risk, and this risk is upon Siemens. We have a success rate of 99.8, and I told Mr. Liebig that I'm glad it's not 100% because I wanted to see if we did really write a check, and we did write a check, that 0.2, that we did not meet our obligation. So it demonstrates that this really does mean that we put our money where our mouth is.
So what I'm asking, so far what we've done is we've completed a preliminary audit, and we were happy to do this at no charge to the city. We spent a lot of engineering time to determine whether it was feasible to create a project that paid for itself or was cash flow positive. We think we have a good understanding of some of the challenges that are facing the city. And what we'd like to do is move to the next step. And the next step is an investment grade audit. This is a very detailed audit where we spend maybe 2 to 3 months engineering and putting decimal points to the estimates that we've put together. We get very specific. And finally, of course, to reach the end goal is to implement this project and guarantee and be the strategic partner for the next 15 years. But first, what we're asking for is a letter of intent and the opportunity to present this to City Council. The letter of intent basically states that it would commit the city to going forward with this project once we complete the investment grade audit and we do demonstrate that we can provide the savings that we're estimating that we can. If the city decides that after the investment grade audit, they don't want to move forward with the project, Siemens would ask for the engineering time to be reimbursed. So what we're asking for, again, is to have the city committed to the investment grade audit, and if we meet those hurdles, basically move forward with the project. If the city moves forward with the project, the letter of intent, the engineering fee, there are no engineering fees. Our goal is not to have the city come out of pocket for any of these expenses. That's not our goal, to charge for the letter of intent. Again, our goal is to implement this project and guarantee those savings going forward. So, Siemens, I'm not sure if the board is very familiar with our company. We have an office in Cypress, California. I know that's not a local resource, but we do have about 200 professionals down there. Worldwide Rule 4217, this allows companies to enter into these type of investment grade audits without going through the RFP process if they choose to do so, if they feel we are qualified to work with the city. The California code was implemented to not only make sure that these projects get done on a fast track, but they did it to encourage these type of projects. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to email this to any of the board members for their reference as well, too. So I always end with this slide, and people often look at me, are you a big Chicago's Bulls fan? And I say, not really, but I love this story. Michael Jordan is considered the greatest basketball player of his time, and he was unable to win a championship on his own until Scottie Pippen joined. So it demonstrates that even the best player in the world can't win by himself. They need the perfect partner to win. We feel that we can be that perfect partner for the city, and we're hoping that the board sees this as well, too. I'd like to open up for questions if there are any.
All right, well, thanks a lot for your presentation. How about if we open it up down this end? Ron, do you have any questions?
You're talking about cost savings to the city. What's the risk for the residents with rate increases based on these new meters?
Well, technically, there wouldn't be rate increases. It would just accurately measure how much water is being passed through.
Okay. My question is, on average, how much higher per month do the average homeowners go up with these new tools?
We estimate that the current degradation is probably around 93% accuracy. So there's, for every 100 gallons that are passing through those meters, they're only measuring about 93 gallons, 94 gallons. So with the new meters, we would get very close to 100 gallons of the water being passed through.
Okay, but you haven't quite answered my question. I asked, on average, what would the homeowner's rate go up? Are you talking 10%, 5%? Are you talking $100 a month, $3 a month? There has to be some figure that you have there.
It depends on the rate structure, if you don't mind, because there's a certain flat rate, and then it goes up in some cities in tiers. So we have the infinite tier here, so it just keeps going up. But currently with our mechanical meters, we're providing more water than residents are paying for. So we would accurately bill for that water. Now, that would stave off future rate increases. So we could recover. So if we buy 100 gallons of water, we're only getting paid back for 93 gallons Correct. Of that water. So we're not recouping our costs for 100% of that water. So bills may go up. Probably bills are going to go up anyway as we go into a rate analysis. Our rates haven't been adjusted since 1994. We don't currently meet our debt coverage ratio. So, but this hopefully this more accurate measuring of water as it goes through the meter will stave off larger increases. But they will go up. We will be billing for the water that goes through the meter rather than the water that's going through the meter and not being registered.
But in the same token, if it's an accurate reading, it could go down.
Typically, water meters never overcharge. As mechanical devices wear out, they don't start spinning faster. They usually spin slower and under register.
Okay, well, shoot me down on that one. I just wanted to commend you on this presentation and your report. It was extremely accurate. I am familiar with Siemens, and you are a blue-chip company. They have the highest quality. You were so thorough that you even brought to my attention that on top of the community center, the solar panels are blue, which attracts the seagulls to make them very, very dirty.
Well,
and
I didn't want to be very
never...
specific about that. That was a little gross. But
well, I think it's very true. Yes. Why would you paint them the color of the ocean? Where are the seagulls going to go? So I thought that was very interesting. So
yes,
thank you very much.
Of course. And we think it's a great way. It's a great symbol of leading by leadership. And we would love to see the city get the maximum performance out of their very nice investment. So.
Actual time span of logistically implementing this when it comes to putting all of these pieces of equipment in place, be they the meters or right. lighting systems or right. whatever.
If we were to receive the approval to move to council meeting, our goal would be to have be on the agenda, let's say, by before summer starts. The investment grade audit would take about 6 weeks to complete, 6 to 8 weeks to complete. And once that's completed, we can move to construction, and the construction would probably take, I'm going to guess, 3 to 6 months, depending. A large part of this depends on the city's pace. We have the ability to move fairly quickly. We have the resources to move as quick as you guys are comfortable with.
So your team of five people that you said you would bring here from elsewhere, engineers and such,
right?
They come from elsewhere. Along with working with city employees to implement this, do you foresee any other job opportunities opening during this time?
We do. We actually try to hire locally as much as possible to create jobs locally. The team of five would just be a project manager, an engineer, right. and managers. The people who would be pulling the meters would be contractors locally, hopefully, that were on your qualified list and are qualified to work with Siemens, that we would, again, try to use as much local resources as possible.
And Siemens would actually oversee those hirings rather than the city.
That's correct. So this project is, again, a turnkey solution from beginning to end. There's the only thing that we would ask for the city is, of course, access to certain facilities, requesting of certain data and so forth, and how they wanted to do the notification to residents about their water meters. There may be like 10 to 15 minutes of downtime while they're changing out the meters, and how we would go about notifying the residents for that. So.
Okay. Well, I was hoping that certainly the process would help the employment situation locally. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
I have about three or four questions, and I guess I'm the cynic of the group. First of all, does Siemens provide the financing or line up the financing for the city?
We have a bank internally called Siemens Financial.
Oh, okay.
However, I will be quite frank, we always shop it to make sure that we're getting a fair rate. Even though they're an internal bank, we still compete for that to make sure that we're getting the best deal.
Oh, okay. Thank you. The second question is, in figuring out this $80,000 a year of savings when you're financing this debt and everything else, are you taking into account reduction of water crew man hours for reading the meters themselves, or maybe somebody might not be in the water crew anymore as a result of the amount of time it takes to read mechanical meters?
Currently, the city employs an outside contractor to read the meters.
Oh, okay.
And so that ends up being, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm thinking it was $60,000 a year.
It's about
so you're reducing a contract, basically, yeah, is what would occur.
$6,000 a month for contract.
Fair enough.
So that would eliminate that.
And the third question, because it always scares me when somebody's going to guarantee it to work or you get your money back, is there any reduction in the quality of the workplace, either due to lower lighting levels, cooler or hotter on given days as a result of changing this thing out? I guess that's my biggest fear if I was an employee and finding out that it's running too much and you're going over hey, let's cut the heating.
One of the things that we found was even with the latest lights that were installed by the city, the fixtures themselves were quite old and the lenses were yellowed. So even though the system itself was efficient, the employees were not getting the maximum benefit of this new light output because of the lenses were actually causing the light to be restricted.
So there's not a reduction in the lumens in the workplace.
That's correct.
Or there's not a reduction in where the thermostat winds up at the end of the day.
Is that
a safe bet to say?
It is a safe bet. It is a safe bet. And the one thing that will happen is that people will lose control, a certain amount of control over their individual thermostat. They won't be able to crank it down to 60 degrees, and the other person next to them will be cranking it up to 80 because she feels chilly.
Right.
So depending on how the director feels, he may restrict that from 68 to 72.
Those are workable numbers to live in. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, I'm afraid I'm a cynic too. So there's two of us at least. I wanted to ask a couple questions, first of all. Exactly or approximately what percent of the savings that you're projecting would come from the water meters versus the electricity kinds of changes you would make in maintaining the solar panels? Buys the water meters for people. Is that correct? So that we're talking about the city making the investment in the water meters and then basically getting the savings back as citizens or the residents of the city are paying their fair share. Is that basically?
That's correct. The water meters are owned by the city as they are now.
Right. And so that's what the city would be, the upfront investment by and large.
That's correct.
Okay. Second question. You said that this was a preliminary audit and the next step would be a more detailed audit. Would you be looking at any other ways to for cost savings, or are you already wedded to these basic three components?
We would love to be able to investigate other things like irrigation, whether smart weather-based irrigation would make sense for the city. During this preliminary audit, we had 2 days to walk through and investigate what we could find because of our limitations by our parent company. However, with an investment grade audit, we can dig a lot deeper, and so we would open up the scope a little bit more. Yes, that's correct.
Because I was somewhat surprised that you just talked about maintenance of the solar panels as opposed to more large scale installation of solar panels, which seems like kind of a no brainer to me.
We can investigate that. I would say that first step would be to get the most out of the one that's operating there currently, and see if it can benefit from a larger system. Again, it only provides about a third of what the community center's total usage is. If it were to make more sense, maybe we can get that closer to 50 or greater.
I'm assuming there are other locations where the city could install solar panels, is what I was suggesting.
You know, the conversation started with the director with the wastewater treatment plant, and hopefully when that gets off the ground, we would love to see that be very, very solar friendly.
Well, I do have to say that I have reservations about spending that kind of money at this point in time, especially when we're looking at increasing the water rates and coming up with a new rate structure. And I just speaking as a citizen, I think they're going, it'll be a shock, especially if they hear that the city is buying new water meters so that they can get more money from the citizens. So I just have to say that. Thanks.
I do have one question. When we talk about, because there's wonderful questions coming from the board, when we talk about this investment grade audit, you made a comment, something like, we can do this audit, but if we choose not to go forward, the city will be on a hook financially to pay back that audit?
That's correct.
How much would that be?
Yes. So there will be a certain hurdle. If we estimate that the city would save, there would be a positive cash flow of $80,000. If we were not able to prove that during our investment grade audit, then of course the city is not responsible or liable for any engineering fees because we failed to meet that hurdle. But however, if we do move forward with this, show that we can save the city, or the city would be able to benefit by $80,000 a year, and the city decides to take that investment grade audit and, let's say, either put it on their shelf or shop it around. Of course, we spent about 2 months worth of engineering time here. We wanted to make sure that the city has kind of skin in the game, let's say, as well as us. So, but again, if once we move forward with the project, our goal is, of course, never to have the city come out of pocket for that expense. That's not the business model that we're in. Our business model is to implement this project and, again, guarantee the savings for the next 15 years.
Well, that makes sense. Do you have a round number about what that would be?
We are estimating, I don't have the exact number, but I'm going to guesstimate it's usually around 2% of the total project cost. So we're looking at around, I believe it was $50,000 to $70,000 in terms of the letter of intent.
No, just because Marlis has a really good point that if we do this and then all of a sudden we're looking at an unfavorable financial climate and we do this and understanding you guys putting in the work and everything, it would just, we need to know everything going forward because you make a lot of very good points about savings, and although Marlis's point also about additional solar, whether it's on the community center or on the planning commission, the planning department building or the city hall, I mean, that would be an interesting way of looking at further savings.
Absolutely.
Okay, so with that, those are my comments. Ron, did you have something else?
Well, you're saying $80,000 a year savings. Okay. Is that in cost of labor? Because if you eliminated the person going out to read the meters, what is that savings a year?
$72,000.
Okay, so we say $72,000 for not having to have someone go out and read the meters, so we're actually about $8,000 difference?
That's how we modeled this project.
Okay, thank you.
One last question, if you'll entertain it.
Please.
Yeah. Who is at risk for changes to the baseline, the city or Siemens?
Siemens would be.
Rick, could you explain your question?
Well, all these savings are predicated on a particular baseline usage, and it's not unusual for an organization to experience changes, either growth or decline, in that energy usage. For instance, if you go into a drought, you're not going to use nearly as much water as has been anticipated, and so that results in a significant change to the estimated savings. And so the question is, who would be at risk for those changes? Would the city have to pay if there were not savings, or would Siemens take that risk on? And what I hear is Siemens takes that risk.
And one more item I want to point out is that in the city's capital improvement program, we currently have an AMR conversion budgeted in the budget at about $250,000 a year for the next starting next year for the next 3 years. So we're planning on encumbering the water fund with capital improvement project at about the tune of $750,000. If not that I'm trying to sell the Siemens project, but we would not have that out-of-pocket capital cash flow if we went with a program like this. And that can have a drastic effect on water rates by not having that large capital project.
I'm not familiar with the AMR meters. Are they the kind where you wave a wand over them and there's like a magnetic pickup on top, or are they the type that send out a signal to a vehicle?
They send it
going
out. There are both. There are both type of meters.
There's still a cost in reading these meters. To get back to Ron, you're not saving the entire $72,000. You still have a cost in reading meters at the end of the day.
The project that we're proposing would be the ones that transmit it wirelessly that don't require WAN to be waved over.
Oh, okay. So it is transmitted wirelessly back. Oh, okay.
To a desktop.
I'd just like to say that this looks to me like pay me now or pay me later. And I'm really proud of the city trying to step up here and get professional input into looking towards the future and being more proactive than reactive. It seems like I've lived in the city for 15 years and we're always coming from behind and we're always trying to get where we need to be. And I think we have to be aware that we have to move into the future at some point and catch up. And I think that this is a good opportunity and should be brought to the City Council and reviewed further.
Thank you.
Rob, I have a question for staff.
Sure.
As this presentation came onto your desk and whatnot, what are some benefits that you see in going forward with this program?
One of the key benefits that I just talked about was we already have a project. We would offset that capital project by using basically Siemens as the bank to do that. Another aspect is we in our water conservation presentation, we talked about that program called Smart Water last time. The customer interface here gives a much of the same information that we would achieve through paying an outside vendor like Smart Water to provide that interface. So I think having the tools to kind of gauge what your water usage and manage your water usage, get that feedback more instantly, can help out. Like my own usage, I didn't realize I had a significant leak and ended up with a $200 water bill. How can this happen, you know? And I'm an engineer, you know. But you cannot, when you have a slow leak, you cannot always see that meter turning when you have that slow leak. But with something like this, you can see that on a daily basis that you're using more water than you should be using.
So then would we go to a different metering program? I know in terms of our online water metering program that we do right now, if we did something like this, would the two marry up, or would we go to the system?
I think we would work with Siemens on how those interfaces. Right now our water program is just strictly for billing and paying your bills online, looking at past history. This is a much more robust program, so we would work with them to marry the two together
as part of the city's billing system as well. So,
oh, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right. If we don't have any further questions, the recommendation. Ron, do you have a question?
Yeah, this is for the city. Have you looked at any other programs similar to this to see if there's something out there in competition with this company that would provide the service at a different rate?
No, we have not.
Are you planning to do that as part of due diligence for the city?
we would make some inquiries, but we don't propose right now to go out to RFP and have a competitive process. This model really doesn't lend itself because of the upfront investment that companies have to make. Not many companies want to make that investment not knowing that they're going to get the job. That's why the it's in the California Government Code section that allows for this direct agreement with these conservation programs.
I would point out that in order to go to an RFP on something like this, the city would be in a position of having to front the cost for the initial investment grade audit so that you would have a baseline to compare against. And so there's more expense involved as well.
Well, last before I ask for a motion, did Siemens approach the city or did we approach Siemens?
Siemens reached out to the city.
All right, so with that in mind, we've heard a lot. We need the recommendation is from staff is to make a recommendation to push this towards City Council. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I make a motion to recommend to move this to City Council to provide a letter of intent to Siemens.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right, so do and so all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those in, not in favor say nay. And state your name.
I'm not voting yes, but I'm not voting no. I'm just being abstaining.
Abstaining. Okay. So the motion carries six votes for and one vote in for abstaining. Okay. So thank you very much. The
thank
motion
you,
carries, and we'll move this on to council. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
We're moving on to item C3, and thank you very much for being patient, gentlemen. And this next item is the approval of updated sewer management plan. Recommendation: staff recommends the following review and discussion of the item. And so we're going to have a little presentation about the sewer system management plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. The item in front of you is the update of the approval of the updated sewer system management plan. The city currently has a sewer system management plan that was adopted in 2009. It was adopted following a requirement by the State Water Resources Control Board when they adopted order number 2006-003 that called for general waste discharge requirements for sanitary sewer systems. In May of 2013, the State Board amended the monitoring and reporting program for that plan. And the updated management plan has addressed those revisions. The waste discharge requirements that the State Board created really called for a centralized statewide mechanism to manage all publicly owned wastewater collection agencies. Prior to that time, a lot of what we have in the sewer system management plan was being done. It just wasn't officially mandated by the state of California. So the actual SSMP, which is the acronym for Sewer System Management Plan, has 11 mandatory elements that the city or public agencies must address. They range in complexity from preparing goals and a mission statement to performing a complete collection system capacity assessment. It does require that we have a sewer spill response plan in place and it also provides for uniform reporting requirements for all public agencies when it comes to sewer spills. The first SSMP was actually adopted in June 2009. So following adoption of the order by the State Board, they gave agencies about 3 years to put the plan together. The plan was brought before the Public Works Advisory Board and the City Council, kind of element by element, as they developed and drafted each of the 11 requirements. We are bringing back, and like I say, state requires that every 5 years we revisit they've broken that down into three separate categories. based on their experience with agencies statewide. So they tried to look, they wanted to make sure that people were reporting accurately what was happening, and I think they got a lot of public input as to the how people in the field can do it effectively and still do their jobs. The other major change was really to reflect changes in the operations and maintenance program that we do on a regular basis and any changes in assets to the system. So we constructed two new lift stations in the last 5 years. They were dry well, wet well kind of combinations, and we had confined space entry procedures to enter those. Our new lift stations are all above ground control, so there's no confined space entries to perform when we check those stations. So those sorts of day-to-day activities that have been altered, we included in the management plan. And then finally, another one of the big changes is we modified language to reflect the fact that it's more of a mature program and that we weren't drafting it from, it wasn't kind of being born. It was actually, it's been living for a while. It's been effective. Our track record proves that the plan addresses the important issues that we need to do. So, and then lastly, I will say, and I did not include this in the SSMP that is in front of you tonight, but it will be when it goes to council, is the state of California recognizes that this is sort of a living document, and it is going to change from time to time. We're going to have people, new employees come in, and we're going to rewrite the org chart, or we're going to have minor changes. We will have a revisions log included as part of Appendix D, and the state asks that if we modify the program, we identify the date, what the general revision was, kind of why you did it, and who approved that change. So those are really the changes that are in front of you tonight. And with that, I would open it up for any questions that you might have.
Well, great. It's a pretty incredible plan, very comprehensive, and thank you, because I remember the one in 2009. Marlis, do you have any questions?
No, I was just very impressed by it. And I looked through the entire thing, and it was very well done, so I had no questions at all.
Thank you.
No questions.
I don't have any questions either, but I'd like to comment that while this might be old news to a lot of people in this building, it's certainly new to me, and having combed through this, it's not a static list of restrictions, but rather, as you mentioned, a very dynamic document that is able to move and change according to the progress of things as it moves forward. And I think it's pretty spectacular, and as ridiculous as it might sound, I was excited reading about a sewer system management plan. So job well done. Thank you.
I read the whole thing, and I was very impressed with all the details in this, the backup plans. It was just the whole thing was so detailed. I feel like I should be able to apply for a job as a waste management collector.
Come on down.
But no, it was very well done. Thank you.
I just want to say good job.
Same thing. Thanks for your hard work.
Thank you.
And I have to ditto all those comments, but I did have one question there for you, Bruce. We talked about the work done on the lift stations and capital improvements, too. And I didn't catch it in here. Is there a list of upcoming, are there any other capital improvement ideas that we need to do with our sewer system?
Yes, we do have the city maintains a 5-year capital improvement schedule for the collection system. So we have projects identified for this next fiscal year, one of which is to rehabilitate the final lift station number one, do some work on that station. We've got some line replacement repair projects that we're pursuing, and we basically review that CIP, that 5-year schedule, during the budget cycle every year. So if we may not get to a project, or the project may grow depending on what the situation is, but we factor those things in with each annual budget review.
And I was the beneficiary of this incredible tour of the wastewater treatment plant yesterday. What you showed me, those tanks that were being worked on, the ones that were being drained and worked on, some of those, are those capital improvement projects, or is that just general maintenance?
The wastewater treatment plant has, we decided not to call it a capital improvements program. We call it a major maintenance and repair program, but it's in essence is a CIP to use that headworks or not use that headworks.
Oh,
but
okay.
We're certainly going to try and be as cost effective as we can in whatever we do down there.
Okay, thank you.
I would point out too, Steve, that as we're developing our specifications for these projects, we do have an eye toward the anticipated life that these projects have to last. So the coating thicknesses that we're applying to the inside of the digester are much thinner than we normally would do for 25 or 30
years. Thank you,
Rick.
That kind of clarifies it for me.
I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Dave Zevely. I'm the collection system supervisor for the city. And I just wanted to say I met Matt during the tour briefly, and you're more than welcome to tour the collection system pump station and see how the wastewater gets to the treatment plant.
Dave, that's a great question. We haven't done that in a number of years, and that would be
For a lot of the new members, I have been down there.
If we want to put that, maybe we'll talk about that on the future agenda items, that we can arrange a date. I know we did it 2 or 3 years ago, but that's 2 years ago, but that would be a wonderful idea. Sure. So, okay, we'll put that in future agenda items.
And can I just say, I want to thank Matt for his little PR plug earlier on not flushing baby wipes and whatnot. It's a real problem nationwide, actually, right now. What is flushable versus non-flushable, and it causes our guys a lot of grief. And I'll also say that to the public and to the Public Works Advisory Board, if anybody wants a tour of the wastewater treatment plant, they can call my office, 772-6272. We would love to have people come through. It gets rid of a lot of misconceptions and misinformation, and it kind of just lets people get a better idea of where we're going and what we have in store for the future.
And I can definitely support that point of view. Doing that yesterday was absolutely, and I've been on a couple of these tours over the years, but it's always great to come back to it and understand that this is a vital part of our community. So with that, I don't think we need a recommendation, correct? We're not asking for one. So thank you for presenting. And
I think it says to recommend to the city council.
Okay, then do we have a motion to recommend the sewer system management plan to council?
I'll make a motion to recommend the sewer system management plan as written to the city council for approval.
Do we have a second?
I second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those not in favor? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you very much. And with that, we move on to item C4. And we've had a very patient C4 folks sitting out here in the audience. Thank you very much. And so what we have, our item C4, is a review of list from Morro Bay Citizen Bike Committee, the list of unmet bicycle needs. So please... approach. Are we going to have a presentation, Rob, or how do you want to do this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Board members, the city received a couple months ago from the the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee and through our friends at SLOCOG a list of potential unmet bicycle needs throughout the community of Morro Bay. This list will be reviewed at the SLOCOG's June agenda, and they will evaluate them whether they are reasonable to meet or not reasonable to meet and make those recommendations to the cities to consider making those improvements. This is the first year that we've actually brought this list formally to our Public Works Advisory Board, and we'll be bringing it also to the City Council this year in anticipation of that SLOCOG meeting. So it's not having looked at this before, I didn't want to put too much of staff's own opinion into how to rank these. But we did make an attempt to rank them, whether they're a high, medium, low priority, and their ease in implementation, and with the idea that those that are high priority and easy to implement, no-brainers. We do those. Refreshing striping. We shouldn't even have to think about refreshing bicycle lane striping. That's something that we need to do as a matter of course through our road maintenance operations. Other projects, or to there's one on there to remove the fixed metal bollards on the bike path. That's an easy one to do, and for the life of me, I can't understand why we have so many of them on the bike path. Because once you make it past the you're restricted by the first one. I don't know why we need it. Aren't so easy in the medium priority. So. With that, I think Mr. Davis would like to make a presentation from behalf of the Citizens Bike Committee, and perhaps there's other folks here that want to speak on this item, and then we can have some board discussion on it. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Robert Davis, and I still chair the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee. I appreciate Rob's commitment to replacing the fixed metal bollards. I took photos of all of them, and I want to bring them up. And thanks. It seems to be a violation of engineering principles to put a fixed object right in the middle of a transportation corridor. And I understand the purpose is to prevent motor vehicles from going on the bike lane, but I think there are better ways to do it. Flexible bollards. And my granddaughter, Caitlin Sullivan, has her story that she would like to say.
So a few days ago, I went on a ride with my family, and I was riding my bike, and I looked away for just a couple seconds, and I looked in front of me again, and there was a pole right in front of me, and I turned away right before I was going to hit it, but it kind of scared me at first, and I really thought I was going to hit it.
So at any rate, I appreciate Rob's willingness to take those out. Another thing, one day when I was riding past the high school, I encountered a golf cart coming toward me, and I was surprised, and I thought about stopping the person and saying, you know, you don't belong here. But I checked at the entrances, and there is no prohibition against golf carts. The only signs that are posted are the entrance from Coral and the entrance from Emerald Circle, and those are the only places that say no motor vehicles allowed. So I'd like to recommend that we put some signs up. But I want to speak most specifically tonight about the Class 1 bike path from Coral down past the high school all the way to the PG&E driveway. That was built several years ago as part of a waterline project. And what's happening right now is that tree roots are growing underneath the pavement. They're heaving the pavement, putting big bumps in it, and a lot of cracks. And I have some photos of some cracks, too. And if you look at the bike map, starting right in the middle of Cloisters Community Park, all the way down to Main Street at Quintana, that bike path is the backbone of Morro Bay's bicycle network. It's a link between North Morro Bay and downtown, and it's also a safe route to Morro Bay High School. I ride this path almost every day. I live in the beach tract, and I come to town, and when I do, I come on my bike. And I always see somebody on the path, and it's a whole variety of users. Bicycle safe standard is a good use of risk management money. It's becoming a liability for walkers and for bicyclists and for skateboarders, and it's something that the city has a responsibility for. So I would urge this board to put this as a high priority project to City Council. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Red. I appreciate that, and I really do appreciate all your time on the bicycle plan, and it's very important to the city. Thank you. We have another comment.
I'm not as tall as Red. Good evening. My name is Dave Albrecht. I'm a member of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club, and I serve on the bike club's board of directors as the bicycle advocate. And it's not a paid position or anything, but my job really is to kind of keep my ear to the ground as far as bicycle-related infrastructure projects throughout the county. And I have to say, I live in Los Osos, so I ride through Morro Bay several times a week en route to Cayucas, and so I feel like I'm a part-time resident of Morro Bay. But I'm really excited about some of the projects that you have here. The bridge over Morro Creek will open up bike traffic through the city. The bike map, of course, is telling residents and visitors alike how to get around town by bike. And then, of course, like Rob said, the paving and striping projects. You have to be a cyclist to ride down and all of a sudden see that Quintana has been restriped and repaved and restriped, and you go, oh my gosh, look at this, a nice big white line that marks the bike traffic from car traffic. And if you're not a cyclist, you don't appreciate those things. But trust me, those things are very much appreciated by people who ride through town. What I would like to comment on, a couple of things on the unmet needs list, is reiterate what Red has said about the Class 1 path by the high school. I rode it just this morning. I came southbound from the Cloisters. It is a rough ride. You know, I feel pretty confident on my bike, so I know how to ride it. But I saw two high school kids on little Razor skateboards trying to jump all those cracks that are in the path, and one of them went down pretty hard. And so in terms of risk, I mean, he clearly was doing something he shouldn't be doing, but it would only take one case to come before the city saying this path or the condition of the path caused my son's injury. So it is something to think about for the future. Secondly, item number 3, the provide more bike parking facilities at popular destinations. I'm a firm believer of the if you build it, they will come. Many, many cities around the country are taking out parking spaces and putting in bike corrals. And so I object a little bit to the wording of loss of automobile parking. You're not losing any parking. You are taking a single parking space and creating a space for 10 bikes. So instead of one or two patrons going to that market or that coffee shop or that restaurant, you could have up to 10 patrons using that parking space and visiting your downtown businesses. Yeah, there are a number of studies that have shown that bike corrals actually increase patronage at downtown businesses. So I would ask you to make that a little more of a priority than it seems to be. And then finally, just don't discount the tourism impact and what cyclists can bring to a community. San Luis Obispo County is a cycling mecca, and I use that term kind of tongue-in-cheek. There are many, many people who come here and bring their bikes, park their cars at their campground or their motel, and simply ride the county. They ride to Avila, they ride to Wine Country, they ride to Cambria, they ride in Morro Bay. And there is no reason that Morro Bay couldn't be one of the most ideal bike tourism communities in our county. So I would encourage you to take this needs report and study it thoroughly and find the money and the staff time to implement these changes. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So with that, we have a recommendation for the PWAB to rank these bicycle needs. And I would offer that what we do is we have this list, and they're ranked 1 through 11 right now. My offer would be, how about if we take these home and rank them and bring them back to the next meeting?
I had a few questions.
We can go with questions. I was just looking at the recommendation.
I'm going to ask
Rob. Did you?
Rob.
Sorry.
He brought up a good thing about the bike corrals, and I guess I'd only want to state, because automobile parking's important too, especially in a tourist community, is if we did put the bike corrals in, I'd almost like to see some enforcement that if you find bicycles up on the sidewalk, they get cited accordingly.
Out of the water on this one, because these seems really, really incredibly important to you wonderful bicyclists, and I don't encounter these things, and I'm trying to figure out how I would prioritize something that I don't use that much.
If I might suggest, instead of taking this home, because we'll be looking to bring this to council in May, so we probably don't have enough time to do that, so that the SLOCOG board can get the list from the city in June. Maybe instead of trying to rank all 11, we might pick out the top five that the top five staff could do more detailed estimates of cost estimates and bring those forward to council. Like I said, the maintenance type issues, the striping, that's really I could not recommend that we don't continue to do that. The removal of bollards seems to be I used to be a big bollard advocate. In fact, Barry can attest to that, you know. But, you know, as I run the bike path and encounter the number of bollards that we have there, I just don't understand why that many are needed. And after reviewing some of the alternatives that we're going to be using on our bridge with the flexible bollards, that might have a much more give. You know, those seems low-hanging, as was stated in the last one, low-hanging fruit. That would be easy. We heard testimony tonight from the public about how important that Class 1 path is by the high school. You know, that seems like it's a high priority to do. And then we've also heard testimony about bike corrals. You know, those might be the ones that you want to focus on. Plus, if any of the board members have any ideas, just a suggestion that way to focus.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the bollards. I mean, since they're a pretty obvious and simple remediation, in my mind, that could be number one, simply because that's immediate and that would have a pretty good effect. We wouldn't have anybody running into them anymore. So that would be number one that I can see. Would anybody else like to offer? That was number two. Number two would be number one.
I guess the question I have, do you actually need a bike corral or just striping on the striping on the space that talks to just being bicycle parking at that point? Is it to lock up your bike? Is that the main purpose of the
bike
corral?
Ideally, you'd like to have some racks there in that bike corral.
Oh, okay.
So that there's a spot. If you in San Luis on Garden Street in front of Linnaeus. They have a bike corral there.
Because I assume that's a structure that costs a certain amount of money, and I could see where cost kind of plays into this.
But we do have a bike rack donation program currently in effect in the city, and I'm not speaking mainly to the board, but everybody else that is watching out there, that it's a rack with plaques program. So you can dedicate a bicycle rack to your favorite person and have that placed in memorial or just to honor that person. There's one in town that has been purchased that is there might be two. I know there's one in front of the across the street from City Hall in front of the optometrist's office.
Well, that seems like it might be low-hanging fruit if you can get these racks, I guess, basically.
Well, what's the going rate for purchasing a rack, as you mentioned?
I think a four-bike rack is around 500-ish, 600, 700. Okay, $700 for a four-bike rack, powder-coated steel. The company comes out and sets it in place with a plaque.
Gotcha.
Another item, and because the thing is, for me, it does come down to money, because one of the I'm a firm advocate. One thing that we've talked about a number of times over the last 6 or 7 years is the Safe Route to Schools route on Greenwood. However, I understand that that's going to be a very sizable situation, grant funding. So I don't think it would be a quick, low-hanging fruit here. But I just want to reiterate that always and always at our meetings, that when the day comes that we can make another Safe Route to Schools grant presentation or outreach, is that the Safe Route to Schools. But with that said, knowing that that's kind of, we can't do that, number 11, refresh bike lane painting around town. That, as Rob says, that's a no-brainer. That could be, as I'm looking at it, number 3.
What do we have so far?
Could I put something in?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just curious to know if the citizens...
What kind of other process?
Well, looking at the low-hanging fruit that Rob has provided us, number 2 has a level 1 easy, which is the metal belt and bollards. Item number 3 is the bike rack, so we've already identified. And if you look on page 2, he has items 10 and 11. Extending the harbor walk north from the, I mean, that's going to be a no-brainer, being that we're going to have our bridge across there. And then number 11 is refresh bike lane. So that would be 4 things. Red, of the remaining, of those 7 remaining, do you have a recommendation for one that you think is feasible in terms of low-hanging fruit that we could recommend?
Yeah, tell me again, which ones you...
Looking at the recommendations of,
Mike.
In terms of the...
Mike.
Levels.
Mike.
It looks like number 2, number 3. It is now. It has been. Number 2, number 3, and looks like 10 and 11. Those are fairly easy to get going. But of the remaining 7, do you have one that you would want to recommend, knowing that it could be done streamlined, not necessarily looking for additional funding from, like, say, for the Safe Route to Schools grant?
One that keeps coming up year after year that is the raise the Class 1 through the PG&E property.
About the flood.
It'd be one that we could look at as far as cost-wise goes, and... see what improvements could be done there. It's just the other one, you know, the Safe Routes to School project, we will continue to move forward as it's a priority project to staff as those funds through the Active Transportation Program are available and they call for projects. We put those projects in. It's just that priority probably should have been high on that one, but ease of implementation is not that easy without funding.
Well,
so I would say those two also would be on, you know, my kind of short list if we wanted to make it to six instead of five.
Well, no, totally. Raising that section of the PG&E bike lane, well, especially during rains, would be incredible because that thing becomes a mud pit and you can't pass it. So that would be, from my perspective, having used these lanes so many times, that would be great. And then, well, from my perspective, but I'm not trying to. If everybody else feels
never
anything.
Never rode it, so I can't state.
Okay. Yeah. And then that safe route to schools is being on that side of town. That is just would be incredible if we ever got that and we're able to improve Greenwood. So I'm fine with six if everybody else is.
Yeah. And maybe, Red, you might want to. I kind of spoke for you there, so if you want to add anything to that discussion.
Well, the tree root encroachment of the Class 1. Okay, that's on there. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's the highest priority just because it's an investment that's in place, and it's at risk for its for what it is, and it also presents a risk to its users.
So you would think, Red, you would advocate for that, for item number six, over raising the bike lane on the PG&E property?
Yes, I would. We can deal with the flood debris by cleaning it after rainstorms. But losing the rest of that bike path, you know, every one of those cracks draws water underneath the pavement, and then that causes alligator cracking of the pavement, and it just gets worse and worse. So, to me, that's the top priority.
Okay. And I would support Red on that because I walk on that trail three or four times a week, and I always have to be very careful because I trip. And on the bumps.
Okay. So with that in mind, the top five of that list are item number 2, item number 3, 10, 11, and 5.
Six.
Oh, I'm sorry.
2, 3, 6, 10, and 11.
Yep. That's what I have. Yep. Okay. We got that? Thank you, Red.
Thanks.
And with that, I mean, go with the low-hanging fruit first, but then that other one is going to be a little bit more involved and a little bit more intensive. Was that sufficient for those recommendations?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If you could confirm that, maybe with a motion.
All right.
And we will move those on with preliminary cost estimates to City Council. And as time permits, we will provide cost estimates for the remaining items also.
Okay. So do we have someone who's going to make a motion? Thank you, Ron.
Yeah. As per the list that was provided, my motion is to move forward with priority item number 2, 3, 6, 10, and 11 for the bike repairs.
Unmet bike needs. Do we have a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion carries. Thank you very much. And thank you for the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And with that in mind, we move on to C5, the Streets Summit, the aftermath. A review of the 2013-14 activities and recommendations for future work. We're going to receive an update, take public testimony, and provide recommendations to City Council for the upcoming goal setting and budget process. And with that, here you go, Rob.
Mr. Chair, Rick Sauerwein, Capital Projects Manager. I'll try to be as brief as possible so we can cut to the questions. But I did want to give you some background. When we went or came before you last year, we talked about the various elements of the street maintenance program. And I've actually changed this slide this year to talk about the street maintenance priorities because I think that what you see here is a prioritization of how we approach our work to get the most value for the dollars that we have available to us. The pavement management plan is by far the single element that gets us the biggest bang for the dollar in our plan. The next most valuable element is one that we're requesting new budgeting in this budget cycle for, and that's to do a better job with our storm drain maintenance and repair. Because when we don't do a good job with that, the water intrusion into the subgrade of our roads deteriorates them dramatically. The third you'll probably be quite surprised with, because I'm talking now about ADA sidewalk repairs. And in the past, that hasn't been a priority. But we're going to talk a little bit later about why it's got to be an essential element of our street maintenance program now, because of an initiative that's been started by the Department of Justice, and they're leaning on the Federal Highway Administration. So that kind of relegates pothole repair to a fourth position, and people aren't really used to seeing it down there. They want those potholes fixed first. But the reality is, when you fix a pothole, you don't do anything to improve your road system, and you spend a lot of money for a very quick fix that doesn't last. And so by doing pavement management and storm drain repair, you get an improvement that will last a long time, and it will reduce the incidences of your pothole repairs. And so that's why we've prioritized these things in the order that we have. You'll remember from last year that we talked about the street condition assessment that we did with our pavement management system back in 2009. We have over 50 miles of road throughout the city, and the condition of the roadways was assessed at a 63 at that point in time. You'll see last year when we went through our evaluation process, we were at a 63 in spite of having invested $1 million in 2011 and 12, and then another $680,000 last year. We're just keeping our head above water. And frankly, if it weren't for the drought, this is the one positive thing that I can say about the drought, is that it's saved our roads, because we're not getting the normal water intrusion that would be tearing our roads apart. So you can imagine when we start to see normal rainfall again, what that's going to do to our roads in an incredibly short period of time. And so we need to start being prepared for that. The goal of our pavement management system here is to raise that pavement condition index from a 63 to a 70. Seems like a very modest, but what you want to do is to try to catch your pavement before it deteriorates too badly, so that you're at that inflection point, which is our point of what we call a point of pavement preservation. Because if we do maintenance before it reaches that point or right at that point, it's only going to cost us about $1 per square foot to repair the roadway. Whereas if we put it off for another 5 or 10 years, it's going to cost somewhere between $6 and $15 a square foot. So the cost goes up dramatically when the roads deteriorate. And the biggest challenge we have in Morro Bay is that we have many, many roads that are down at the bottom of the curve right now. And we don't have the resources to invest in the large projects to bring them back up to that condition. So ideally where we want to get is to a situation where we do repeated numbers of minor repairs to the roadways before they get so bad, because you can extend the life of that roadway 10 times for the same cost as you would with waiting until it deteriorates completely. Last year, when we looked at the program, we felt like it had some shortfalls, and you asked us to make some changes by establishing some geographic project areas and doing a better job of equitably distributing the resources that we do have. I'm happy to say that we accomplished that last year, and I think that most people would agree with that. You also asked us to look at how can we find dedicated funds to improve our roadways, and we talked about how important it would be to be able to have a dedicated source so that we could go out and borrow and do the improvements up front while the costs are lower than they're going to be in the future when our construction costs go back up to where they used to be. We haven't made a lot of progress with that one, but we're still hopeful that we'll be able to move that initiative forward in the future. We have implemented new rehabilitation techniques. We did some more of the triple layer this year up on Norwick. That road was in terrible shape. If you drive it today, you'd be amazed at the difference that it's made. It really was a great improvement that was relatively inexpensive. We still would like to add street sweeping to our trash franchise. That's an issue that we haven't been able to address yet, but is still on our list of things to do. And we rejected the idea of trying to maintain our sidewalks by enforcing the street and highways code that requires property owners to do that. The council considered it, but didn't think it was in the interests of the residents. So looking forward to what did we just accomplish in this last year, we had $682,000 devoted to streets, which was a big help. $100,000 of that was dedicated to maintenance, but it was used on our dig out and repair and rebuild project so that we coordinated our maintenance activities with our street improvements because we got better value for the work. And then we didn't have the disruption with our maintenance forces. It's very difficult to try to bring a large crew together to do major repairs. And our street crew is limited to two people right now. So what we typically have to do is augment with people from our water crew or our sewer collections crew. I think that was a real success story. We also had a resurfacing contract. It was primarily focused on microsurfacing in the triple layer that I talked about. By taking this approach, we were able to address 33 street segments, and we did it every area of the community. And we did Beach Street segments, we did Harbor View segments, we did North Morro Bay, we did South Morro Bay. So I think we pleased a lot of people, and nobody felt left out. It was 7.4 miles of road that we were able to address. That was 14% of our system. This coming year ahead, we've put together a program, that program is in your packet. I opted not to give you an eye chart here. Please present themselves. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen very often. We were very fortunate this year that Rob made a strong pitch to SLOCOG about the fact that South Bay Boulevard really is a regional issue. It's not just a Morro Bay issue, and they were receptive to that. And they've provided $275,000 extra that we're going to move forward with, a major improvement down there. And we're looking to see how far we can stretch those funds to see if there are other improvements besides just resurfacing that we can do. Too early to tell on that, but we're giving her an attempt. In addition to that, we recognize that there are six hillside streets that have got a waterline trench in them that is starting to fail. And we had hoped that we'd be able to put that off long enough to get the tank built up at the top of Nutmeg and get all that heavy truck traffic done with before we did some major improvements. But as we've assessed it over the course of this last year, we think it's failing too quickly, and we need to address that now. Or else we'll not only be repairing a roadway, we'll be repairing a water line as well. And if there's one thing worse than not being able to get to your house, it's not being able to take a shower when you get there. So we're going to fund that out of our water revenue fund, because it is directly related to the work that was done previously on that water line. So that work will go forward as well. You'll see the other projects that we've listed here in your handout. If you have any additional questions about streets that are of interest to you, I'd be happy to address those. I would just also point out to you that there is a new twist to our resurfacing program that we need to address. We think we're able to address it this year, but we're not exactly sure where we're going to go in the future. And that's because of the American with Disabilities Act issues that have evolved from the Department of Justice going to the Federal Highway Administration and saying, look, it's been 25 years since this went into play. We go everywhere in the nation, and nobody's doing anything significantly about it, because nobody can afford to. We've got to do something to make this a priority. And so they've made a ruling that says if we're doing a major resurfacing project, we have to address the ADA issues that are associated with existing pedestrian walkways that are in place that do not have adequate curb ramps. There's also some question about, does that mean that we also have to address signage and signals in some cases? And that's the unknown right now about the program. We believe that if we address curb ramps where we have existing sidewalks, that we're going to be covered. Because we do have the CDBG funds, we're going to try to target those funds to areas where we do want to do major resurfacing so that we can keep both of these programs moving along. But what you see is that a lot of people in Washington, D.C. that don't know much about roads try to decide what's maintenance and what's an alteration. Because if it's maintenance, you can do it without changing the sidewalks and the ramps. If it is an alteration, you have to do it. And frankly, from an engineer's perspective, there's not a lot of logic to this. But we have to live with the rules, and we're doing everything that we can to make it work with the rules that we're given to play with. Could have a very dramatic impact on what we can and can't accomplish in the future. Because if, as you see from this chart here, the cost could go anywhere. Right now, it normally costs about $215,000 over 50 years to treat a roadway with a normal maintenance cycle. If we have to address curb ramps everywhere that we do that work, that cost goes up about 50%. If we have to address not only the curb ramps but the signals and the signage, it goes up very dramatically. So the jury's out. We'll keep moving forward.
What always gets me a little concerned and squishy is when I see monies coming from another enterprise fund to help fund the street issue. Looking at the water line, I could appreciate it if it was held either as a separate contract or a separate line item and only such monies that go to the trench repair. come out of the water fund as opposed to setting a set dollar amount, if you follow what I'm saying. It would be just as easy to go after the bike path people and say, well, gee, a class 2 bike path's on the street. Therefore, let's take the money to use for towards streets.
That's exactly why we're going to be very limited and very direct in the
fine.
Repairs that we're going to make.
That's what I kind of want to make sure.
It's not going to be a complete resurfacing of the whole street. It's going to be a grind and replace probably 4 to 5 feet of width, a foot or so on either side, recompact the trench, and then come back and resurface.
Oh, okay. But I guess what I was driving at, I could see the recompaction on the trench at all, but it seems to me it shouldn't be coming out of the water fund to put down the pavement.
The pavement would have never failed if the trench hadn't been there.
I always worry when I see money's flowing from one, you know, and it happens a lot of times in budget crunches. So that's all I wanted to throw out there. It's more just a concern.
When those water lines were originally installed, the backfill was beach sand, so that has migrated away from the and caused longitudinal crackings along those that trench wall. So it's basically caused the pavement failure there. That's how we're justifying the actual pavement repair also.
Oh, okay. So the $150K also includes some pavement work, not just the repair and recompaction of
Correct.
The trench itself.
Just a foot on either side.
Oh, okay.
We're not paving the entire street
gotcha.
For $150,000. Okay. We're yeah.
No, that's where I get worried sometimes.
I just want to just provide a little bit more input on the pedestrian issue is, as we move forward in the future, the state has a requirement for what's called complete streets. So streets need to be accessible to all users. So I think perhaps the days of they may not look like conventional sidewalks on the streets anymore, but there will have to be a pedestrian component on each and every street. And saying that the pedestrian can walk down the middle of the street when you have a greater than 2% cross slope may not meet the ADA rules either. So I think as we update our circulation element and do more street improvements, the amount of pedestrian facilities that we have to provide will increase.
Okay, thank you.
I don't actually have any questions, but I do commend you on the work that's been done in the last couple of years from the concrete drainage at intersections, especially up in North Morro Bay where I live, and then the recent resurfacing that you've distributed around town. I think you're right in that people do feel good knowing that it didn't all happen in just one area of town, that it was distributed as equally as the budget allowed. So nice work.
Just a clarification on this schedule of pavement management plan for 5 years. Is this what you're planning to do right now, or is this all dependent on money coming in?
This is our proposed budget. So, yes, it's dependent upon a budget allocation from the City Council, and we'll move forward with the regular budget cycle.
So it's not pretty
it's
much
not
set.
Cast in stone yet.
Okay. Thank you.
And the primary source of funding for these street projects is our half-cent sales tax measure, the Measure Q funds. That's where we, I won't say go to battle, but compete with other city needs for those funds. So, you know, each department has their list of things that they would like to do with those funds. And the priorities for Measure Q funds are public safety, streets, and clean roads and storm drains are the uses that are associated with Measure Q.
All right. Well, wow. I'm totally impressed in the last couple of years to be able to do this and spread the goodness around Morro Bay and to show what you've done. So that's absolutely great. And I know people all over town that I've been talking to have been really happy with how their streets. Now, of course, some people, and I wish Jim Hawley had stayed talking about Nutmeg, but Jim, if you're at home, hopefully you've heard this part and you know that Nutmeg is going to be taken care of. All right, so that's great. I guess you guys at the beginning of the meeting were like, oh, wow, we should have told him. But so it'd be like Christmas for you when you get home, Jim. I do have a question about the completed work in 2013-14. The third
course out, we would like to receive recommendation from the board that this be considered by City Council as the list of projects for this upcoming budget year.
Well, do we have someone who would like to make a recommendation?
Excuse me. I recommend that we present to City Council that we approve of this list of recommended projects as submitted by the Public Services Department.
I second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 I don't think we're going to have a nay, so the motion
carries. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. And with that said, that was our last item, and I do believe this might have set the record for the past couple of years for the longest PWAB meeting we've had. Our future agenda items that we talked about is maybe setting up a tour of the wastewater treatment plant. For those of you on PWAB who haven't done this, and usually we do that, I think the last time we did it at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So if we could possibly set that up, Rob.
And we're getting to the time of year where we have enough light to complete the tour. I know we delayed it long enough last year to where we ran into the time of year that even if we would have started at 3, we probably would have been in the dark by the time we finished. So maybe during the your off month next month, we can pick a date.
When does the trolley start?
Memorial Day, yeah.
Because that's what we did last time.
Yeah, so we would actually use the trolley on probably a non-typical trolley day, right, so we can get a driver and have AGP come on with a camera and film us. And so what I'll do is I'll poll the board for potential dates, and if you could email without CCing the rest of the board members, I would appreciate that, and we can find a date that works for everybody.
Sounds good.
Okay, so with that, wonderful. Our next PWAB meeting is June 19th at 6 o'clock. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.